no Christian should have voted for Joe Biden. This doesn't mean I question anyone's salvation. If you voted for Joe Biden, or by the nature of who you voted for, you're a true Christian or not. But I do believe if you are a well-informed voter and if you truly do walk with the Lord, there's no reason and you could not have voted for Joe Biden. So let's debunk common reasons that Christians cite when they're voting for Joe Biden. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Korean Christian Conservative, where I talk about culture, news, politics, theology, whatever, from the perspective of a Korean American who is politically conservative and loves Jesus Christ. And so today we're going to be talking about a lot of reasons I've heard why Christians said they voted for Joe Biden, and I just kind of want to walk us through this. There's a lot of reasons why they cite. I'm going to tackle the main points and debunk and show why that's not the case. So I want to start off by talking about John Piper's article about policies. His article called Policies, Persons, and Paths to Ruin. And so this was his article that I saw a lot of my friends circulate around 2 weeks ago about John Piper's thoughts on the 2020 election. And I disagree with John Piper a lot. So typically I listen to his sermons, read his articles. I think he's a great person, great theologian, one of the greatest of our time. I do lean a little more charismatic in my theology, so I don't agree with him completely because he is a pretty much hardcore Calvinist. But he came out with this article recently, and I do want to read this excerpt. He says, "I think Roe is an evil decision. I think Planned Parenthood is a code name for baby killing and, historically at least, ethnic cleansing," which is true. "I think it is baffling and presumptuous to assume that pro-abortion policies kill more people than a culture saturating pro-self pride. When a leader models self-absorbed, self-exalting boastfulness, he models the most deadly behavior in the world. He points this nation to destruction, destruction of more kinds than we can imagine. It is naive to think that a man can be effectively pro-life and manifest consistently the character traits that lead to death, temporal and eternal." I just don't understand how John Piper can equate the dismembering and just crushing of an unborn baby's skull to Trump, who tweets about how great he is and how much he's done for this country. They are not on the same moral playing field. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, you cannot make a moral equivalency to killing an innocent life and murdering someone, if you believe abortion is murder, to Trump tweeting and talking about how great he is. I agree. Yes, culture does influence politics, and it is politics is downstream of culture. And it, like, Trump is very responsible. He is responsible for what he says and what he does, and has long-term consequences. I do agree with that. But this notion that just because he is somewhat, like, more obnoxious and rambunctious than what we're typically used to for presidents, that this is, like, completely just, this takes the cake of, like, why we cannot vote for Trump. It's absurd. Because there's this idea, there's this interesting, very interesting idea that Joe Biden is a much more virtuous person than Trump. and, like, that voting for Joe Biden, like the act of voting for Joe Biden into the White House, can actually advance kingdom causes. There's this idea going around, right? And there's nothing can be further from the truth. Nothing. And so I'm gonna talk about a bunch of reasons why a lot of people say, oh yeah, voted for Joe Biden over Trump, although maybe I didn't like Joe Biden, or people who say, I like Joe Biden as a Christian and I'm voting for him over Trump. And so, first reason, voting for Joe Biden will get rid of the violence on the streets. So this past year was marked by crazy amounts of violence, right, on the streets, a lot of altercations. And of course the media lied about it all the time. They said either it was mostly peaceful so we could ignore the violence, or the Proud Boys, right-wing militias, you know, the alt-right, right? They started all the violence, which is not true. But aside from all of that, right, this idea that voting for Joe Biden will cause like, we'll get rid of the violence and bring peace to the streets is a complete lie, and we already saw it this past weekend. So this past weekend, there's the Million MAGA March. In D.C., yesterday, I saw, like, over a million Trump supporters. I had a few friends who went there, and there's over a million Trump supporters gathered in D.C. to peacefully march to call and bring awareness to election fraud, if there is voter fraud, which I'll be talking about in my next episode, and just to show their support for our president, right? But we already saw, when they came, BLM and Antifa came to completely terrorize them. I mean, old men were being completely pummeled and stomped on. Children and families are being harassed and threatened by these violent thugs. Fireworks shot and lasers pointed at hotel rooms that Trump supporters are staying at. And objects being thrown at Trump supporters eating in restaurants. I mean, it's crazy. I was in D.C. Like 2 weeks ago, and I'm just so glad I'm not there right now because the violence is insane. Even what I saw before the election happened with people just completely vandalizing the fence around the White House and just how much hate, hatred they were spewing about how they want Donald Trump to die. And like this violence is manifesting again, right? Even though Joe Biden's declared the victory, like the victor in the 2020 election, all of Hollywood, all of mainstream news, everyone, right? All our major cultural institutions are declaring Joe Biden as presidential, the president elect. But they're still being violent, right? And we know that this is coming from the left. This is not coming from the right. I don't want to be so partisan here. And I know that I am biased, but we know over a million Trump supporters marching. None destroyed any businesses. None got violent until Antifa and BLM came and harassed them, right? And this is a very interesting point that I saw on Twitter today. I forgot who tweeted this, but they said, ever notice that Trump supporters march in the day and Biden supporters march at night? Which is so true. When we think about the protests, right? Like, of course, like there are tons of protests that happen during the day and most of them are peaceful. I get it for the BLM when BLM was a huge thing this past year. But when we think about like the people who are really on the front lines, Trump supporters are peacefully marching during the day and Biden supporters are completely, I don't want to characterize all Biden supporters like this, but the ones who are violent, the violent thugs of BLM and Antifa who hate Trump with their whole being, they come out at night, right? And they come out to terrorize at night. And so this idea that voting for Joe Biden will get rid of violence on the streets is not true. This is the same to giving in to the demands of a spoiled, entitled, whiny kid, right? And then so we saw that all these businesses and all these small businesses and shops were boarding up in all the cities. I was in D.C., right? So I saw like nearly all of D.C. was boarded up in preparation for the riots, right? But we didn't see a lot of those riots happen. Why? Because Trump wasn't declared the winner. But we didn't see riots and everyone's like, yes, like voting for Joe Biden will be good and peaceful for all of us. But this is not true. Think about a kid, right? And so a kid's whining and throwing a temper tantrum. And you appease them. Let's say they want a piece of candy. They're like, I want this candy. And then the immediate short-term solution is to give them that candy so they stop throwing that temper tantrum, right? But if you give in a little bit, they'll come back for more. Because those small victories, it shows them that they have the power and they can do whatever they want, right? And so that's why it's pretty silent right now. We don't have crazy riots going on in the streets because Biden was declared the winner. But we already see that they're not satisfied and they will continue to terrorize and continue to be violent and attack people based on what they're wearing, what their skin color is, or who they voted for, right? I mean, just the news has just been lying to us that the shops were being boarded up for Trump supporters and these right-wing militias when Joe Biden was declared the winner. We didn't see any of that, right? And so voting for Joe Biden will not get rid of the violence on the streets. And we need to crack down on BLM and Antifa to get rid of these violent thugs so that the people who are affected the most, the poor, the impoverished, and the minorities, right? So they feel safe. And they can live out that American dream that we all talk about. So that's just not it. Okay, so this one is huge, and this is going to take a while, but I'm going to just like try to run through this one. Next point, abortion is actually lowered when Democrats control the White House. This, I saw this happen a lot. A lot of people on my newsfeed were quoting this and saying, yeah, we need to vote for Joe Biden because of this thing. So first of all, we need to establish why abortion is bad. So in Jeremiah 1:5, it says, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. I appointed you a prophet to the nations. In Psalms 139:13-14, he says, for you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. And so we know theologically and according to the Bible and biblically, the life in a mother's womb, the baby, I will refrain from saying fetus because fetus and zygote and whatever that people say is just gaslighting you to think that the baby inside the womb is not a life. The baby in the womb is a life, according to the Bible, right? And by all scientific metrics, it is also a life. And so I'll get into that another episode, hopefully. But we have, like, let's first establish, yes, the life inside the baby inside the womb is a life. And because it's a life, according to the Constitution and the foundings of this country, its fundamental right to life should be protected, right? And so legally and legislatively, they should be protected. But there's this popular graph going around, right, around social media saying that abortions decreased during the Clinton and Obama administrations. So first of all, correlation does not prove causation, right? So let's, for example, let's talk about Korean dramas, right? So popularity increased a lot the past 4 years under the Trump administration for Korean dramas. I see so many people who weren't into Korean dramas all into Korean dramas, right? So is Trump responsible for the increase of K-pop culture and Koreaboo culture infiltrating the United States? No, that's absurd, right? I mean, we, like, in the same way, just because abortion rates declined when a Democrat was in the White House, right, does not mean that they were responsible and they contributed to the lower and decreasing abortion rates. We need to be able to prove that the Democrats did something to lower the abortion rates. And so you're going to have to name to me one policy. What did the Democrats do to push lowering abortion rates? None. There are absolutely none, right? And so, but we already know that after 1980, abortion rates also lowered during the Republican administrations as well, right? So, but Christians say, like Christians who voted for Biden say, oh, but it lowered more during Obama administration versus the Bush administration. But that does nothing to prove causation. I mean, I can make the same point because of Bush. Like during the Bush administration, abortion was lowered by 4%. And so he actually did something, right? And so here's some facts, right? Let's talk to the Guttmacher Institute, which is a pro-choice research institute that used to be the research arm of Planned Parenthood. So they're a pro-choice research organization. But this is what they say. It's incredibly difficult to prove that federal and presidential policy affects abortion procurement, right? Because access to abortions differ at the state levels. There were more state-level abortion restrictions passed during Obama's administration than Republican administrations. 22 states enacted 70 abortion restrictions in 2013. This makes 2013 second to only 2011 in the number of abortion restrictions enacted in a single year. There were fewer state abortions put in place in Bush's administration than Obama's, which would largely explain the 4% decrease in Bush's administration versus the 26% decrease in Obama's, right? And so we know that there are more state abortion restrictions put into place in 2 years of Obama's administration than the entire 8 years of Bush's administration, right? So maybe that plays a part, right? Maybe state legislators putting in more laws in 2 years during the Obama administration versus the 8 years during Bush's administration, that plays a part in decreasing the abortion rates. And so, of course, this Guttmacher Institute is pro-choice, so they try to say, oh, there's a lot of different causes and a lot of different aspects as to why abortion rates decreased, right? But even they admit that Republican abortion restriction policies in states have caused some abortion clinics to shut down, which decreases access to abortion to contribute to the decline of abortions. They don't say that this is the sole cause of it, but they do cite it as one reason, and this is a reason that we need to consider. And so if we look at the number of abortions that fell, right? The number of abortions fell by 196,000, a 90% decline from 1,058,000 abortions in 2011 to 862,000 abortions in 2017. That's a lot of babies saved. The abortion rate, the number of abortions per 1,000 women aged 15 to 44 fell by 20% from 16.9 in 2011 to 13.5 in 2017. The abortion ratio fell 13% from 21.2 in 2011 to 18.4 in 2017. So this is what the Guttmacher Institute says. The question of what is behind these trends has important policy implications, and the 2011 to 2017 period warrants particular attention because it coincided with an unprecedented wave of new abortion restrictions. During that time frame, 32 states enacted a total of 392 new restrictions, with the vast majority of these measures having taken place having taken effect. So remember, the president does not make laws. The legislative bodies in our country do. So let's look at the different presidents, right? In Reagan's presidency, the Democrats controlled the House. In George Bush Sr.'s presidency, Democrats controlled both chambers of Congress. Republicans controlled the House and the Senate for most of Clinton's presidency. And the Republicans controlled the House during Obama's administration when abortions declined significantly, right? So, the argument that liberal policies under a Democratic, like, president reduce abortion is an incredibly fallacious argument. It's not backed up by any facts whatsoever, right? I mean, when Obama was president, the Democrats experienced the largest loss of state legislative seats since World War II. Please tell me which liberal policies, what liberal legislation led to a reduced abortion rate. And so, according to the CDC, right, there's multiple factors that affect abortion rates. There's the availability of abortion providers, state regulations, so mandatory waiting periods, parental involvement laws, other restrictions, right, which are all, by the way, Republican policies, right, changes in the economy, the increased acceptance of non-marital childbearing between families, cultural differences and behavioral patterns in racial and ethnic communities, and access to healthcare services and contraceptives, right? And so there is no proof of a causal relationship between a Democrat president and reduced abortion rates. There's none. There's no facts that back this up. Here's some more facts. So this is from Samuel Say. He is the owner of the blog Slow to Write. He's a great author and blogger. I discovered him a few weeks ago, and I've been following him on Twitter, and what he says, he speaks so much truth. But this is what he says about abortion. It's kind of long. Follow along with me. It's disturbing that some professing Christians seem more willing to give pro-abortion politicians who unashamedly threaten to expand abortion laws more credit for decreasing abortion rates than pro-life advocates and pro-life politicians. But that kind of illogical thinking is preceded by a failure to challenge our culture's narratives on abortion. For instance, it is not true that welfare programs decrease abortion rates. There isn't a single legitimate research that supports that claim. Nevertheless, many people believe welfare programs decrease the rate of abortions because they believe poor women are more likely than wealthy women to get abortions. Well, but that's not true either. Wealthier women are actually more likely to get abortions than poor women. That's partly why African countries have the lowest abortion rates in the world. Actually, in America, the states with the highest abortion rates are Democrat-controlled states with the most expansive welfare programs in the country. And that's consistent with international data. The top 14 nations with the highest abortion rates in the world are either current or former socialist nations. Welfare programs and socialistic policies do not decrease abortion rates. There's actually more reason to believe they increase abortion rates. And that shouldn't be surprising. Stealing from people to stop others from murder isn't helpful. True. Overtaxing innocent people to decrease abortion rates does not stop one injustice, it causes two injustices. After all, is that God's reaction to people who killed their babies in the Bible? When the ancient Israelites sacrificed their children to Moloch, did God instruct the priests and kings to create welfare programs to stop the parents from killing their babies? Abortion rates have been steadily declining since the early 1980s because after Roe v. Wade, pro-life advocates and pro-life politicians developed what is now the modern pro-life movement. Beginning in 1980, pro-life advocates and pro-life politicians worked together to produce the Hyde Amendment, a bill that prevents federal taxpayer money from funding most abortions. Abortion rates started to decline for the first time shortly after the bill was passed. In fact, research shows the bill has prevented 2 million abortions over the last 40 years. However, Joe Biden and the Democratic Party have officially listed repealing, and I repeat, repealing the Hyde Amendment on their platform. Right? And so we know that liberal policies actually don't decrease abortion rates, but actually increases it, and it's Republican and conservative and pro-life legislation that actually decreases abortion rates. So there's another study done by economists Philip Levine and Douglas Steger in 2004. So they say in their study, they show that abortion rates are 20 times higher in countries where abortion was legal on demand than countries where it was legal only in rare situations. Countries with modest restrictions had on average a 25% smaller abortion rate than countries where it was unrestricted. In America, abortion rates increased after Roe v. Wade. So the very first year after abortion was legalized federally, the abortion rate shot up by 46%. Between 1974 and 1980, the rate continued to climb by roughly another 52%, and with the implementation of the Hyde Amendment and as states gradually introduced laws to protect the unborn, abortion rates declined. And it's been gradually declining since its peak in 1980, right? So legislation matters. Informed consent laws, parental involvement laws, restricting taxpayer funding of abortions, right? These have all been statistically shown to decrease abortion rates. So we know legislation does help protect babies. There's this common idea that just because we outlaw abortion doesn't mean that they'll stop. Of course, yes, there will be people who still try to get illegal abortions, right? But by outlawing abortion and making it illegal, we'll have tens of thousands of babies being saved every year because regular women will not want to go through the hoops and the loops to get illegal abortions. And that's a net win, right? That's a net win. But just think about it. If we believe that the baby inside the womb is a life, then we need to protect it. Constitutionally, also morally, theologically, right? Like, we have to protect it because the sanctity of life, there's nothing more pressing than the sanctity of life. That is why murder is like the most extreme crime you can commit in this country, right? And so, like, imagine if we had the same mentality, right? Imagine with violent crime, with murder, theft, all these things. Oh, yeah, like, oh, we shouldn't outlaw murder because it's going to happen anyways, right? All outlawing murder will do was will get people to do sketchy things and to get guns and weapons illegally and kill people like in shady areas so no one finds out and do it very dangerously, right? I mean, this is stupid. Of course, if you outlaw something, there are still going to be people who do it. That's just the nature of living in a fallen world, right? But statistically, we see that Republican conservative state legislation, right, even federal legislation, has contributed to the decrease in abortion. Right? So, and even like, this is where I'm kind of disappointed in the, in Trump and Republican presidents in the past, where really like the only federal policies that affect abortion, when we think about it from just a legislative level, is the 1976 Hyde Amendment, which prohibits federal taxpayer money from funding most abortions, and the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act of 2003 that prohibited partial birth abortions and was upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court in 2007 as constitutional in Gonzalez versus Carhart. Other than that, it's really been state legislators really pushing the pro-life agenda, which has decreased abortion rates because of the restrictions put, right? And again, there were more state restrictions and legislation passed during the Obama administration than the Bush administration. Therefore, we can logically assume that these affected the decreased abortion rates and contributed to that decreased abortion rates, right? The problem that a lot of people have when they're looking at statistics and looking at these things is that they have a very reductionist view of understanding things. They don't consider the confounding factors. They see a graph. They say, oh, yeah, Obama's like responsible for that. Oh, perfect. Yeah, like we need to vote in a Democrat president. It is intellectually dishonest and statistically illiterate to make that assumption and that conclusion from that. Not saying you're dumb if you did. Not saying that you're stupid. But it's very easy for us in this age of very, very, like when information is being thrown at us every single day, shoved down our throats. I know it's very easy to make like simple correlations and make conclusions and be very confident in those conclusions. But as Christians, we have to be smarter about this. We must. And it is a lot of work. But we have to be willing to be on the front lines of pursuing truth and understanding these things and all the implications and all the variables that play into a lot of these issues and all these stats. Because without it, we can't make logical conclusions and truthful conclusions that are rooted truly in facts and evidence, not just what people say it is, right? There's that famous saying, stats tell lies? No, lies. Anyway, statisticians and stats you can make stats say anything you want. I forgot this phrase. I'm having a brain fart. But we need to be vigilant. Christian, you must be vigilant. And so, what's the contrary of this, right? Like, what did Trump do? Well, Trump signed the Born Alive Executive Order on September 25th, 2020, right? So very recently, ensuring medical care for all babies born prematurely or after an attempted abortion. This is what Trump says, quote, "Today, I'm announcing that I will be signing the Born Alive Executive Order to ensure that all precious babies born alive, no matter their circumstances, receive the medical care they deserve." He says, he wants to protect the, quote, "eternal truth that every child born and unborn is made in the holy image of God," end quote. He also supports a bill of the same name proposed by Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska, which would institute fines or prison time for healthcare practitioners who fail to provide care for a baby that shows signs of life after an abortion. So, Trump is clearly, so well, if we know that legislation, right, and laws and policies affect abortion rates, which I know there's so many other factors and cultural factors and individual decisions that play into these like rates and these stats. But if it's been proven and is more intellectually honest and more backed up by facts and evidence that legislation leads to decreased abortion rates, and Trump is pushing for legislation that protects the unborn, why would we vote for Joe Biden? Why? Right? He wants more abortion laws. He wants to expand abortion. He wants to provide more taxpayer dollars, use our money to fund abortions. No. No. Oh, oop, I hit the mic. Like, no. Like, absolutely not. I will not stand for that. No, not my money will not be going to contribute to the murder and slaughter and dismembering of innocent babies in the womb. I'm not here for it. No, I am not here for it. This is the civil rights issue of our day. Some people say it's school choice. Some people say it's other things, right? I mean, a lot of issues are important. But the most pressing issue is abortion. You're literally murdering babies and not even giving them the chance at life. And these are truly voiceless because they can't even speak. You're just killing them. This is our civil rights issue of today. We cannot vote for Joe Biden because voting for him will not decrease abortions, but it could have the potential to increase abortions. So there's that. Debunking the abortion is lowered when Democrats control the White House, and debunking the narrative and this idea that liberal policies help contribute to lowered abortion rates, because this is just not the case. Not supported by any sort of facts whatsoever. All right, next. There's this another popular claim that Joe Biden is a nice, faithful, you know, committed Catholic. False. This is why. It's by his actions and what values he espouses, right? There's this very famous, this was popular graphic going around about the Christian vote. Republican or Democrat. And so it walks us through why, like what we should consider and who we should vote for according to the Bible. So I'm going to tackle each point and talk about why Biden isn't that candidate. We must vote for the most pro-life candidate simply because God hates the shedding of innocent blood, according to Proverbs 6:17. We already touched on this. Abortion. Trump is more pro-life. He is the most pro-life president we've had in U.S. presidential history. He is the first president to speak at the March for Life event. We must vote for the most pro-Israel candidate because God promises to bless those who bless Israel and curse those that curse Israel, according to Genesis 12:3. Trump moved the embassy to Jerusalem. He brokered the peace deals and the trade agreements, between Bahrain, UAE, and other potential countries coming up like Saudi Arabia. I know Morocco is also in the conversation. And these countries in the Middle East are recognizing the sovereignty of Israel to exist as its own state, which the Bible is very clear on. We must be pro-Israel. Biden's not that. They wouldn't move. They wouldn't budge. They wouldn't do anything. They wouldn't move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. They didn't recognize. They just cowered in fear. They're like, oh, Middle East, there's not going to be peace anymore. It's just always going to be violent. Next, we must vote for the most pro-debt reduction candidate because the borrower is a servant to the lender. Proverbs 22:7. People say, oh, the national debt increased under Trump. The rate at which it increased did not increase as fast as it did in Obama's administration. So under Obama and Biden, right, the national debt doubled. It's like if you look at the graph from like when we first had debt from starting from FDR, it's like this. It's a little bit like this. Clinton, it's like this. And then Bush is like this. And Obama's like this. For those listening, I just drew the graph and there's a crazy increase in the debt that we had in this country under Obama and Biden from 2008 to 2016. Trump was trying to get rid of that. Trump repealed taxes, right, which increased government revenue by 4%, right? And he's been doing more and more to repeal regulations, just free handouts and things like that. And even if there are handouts, he wants to allocate them better. For example, school choice, right? And so, but this is the thing, like, economic conservatism is biblical, where we don't just like continue to accumulate debt for a country Because what happens if we're going to have another Greece? We're going to go bankrupt and things are just going to go to crap. And so Joe Biden promises more free stuff, right? Free education, free healthcare, all that stuff. Not completely free like Bernie did, but and Elizabeth Warren, but, you know, trying to like do all these things to increase the national debt and to increase our the government spending and just use more taxpayer money that we don't even that the government doesn't even have, right? But Trump's trying to repeal that. Trump's trying to decrease that by nature of him being a conservative. Next, we must vote for the most pro-work candidate because God says if a man won't work, let him not eat. And 2 Thessalonians 3:10. So true. So the Democrats are all about handouts, free stuff, right? And I get it. Like, it seems great. It's like, oh, I'm trying to care for the poor. But we know that this doesn't work. Like, we know that government handouts actually lead to more crippling and more hurt and more perpetuation of cycles of poverty for these people. On the other hand, conservatism is about working hard, right? Even if you are in unfortunate circumstances, right, you still need to work hard, and no one's going to just be there to give you handouts because you have to go and make a name for yourself and provide for your family and provide for yourself. There's room to talk about where we can help out, but that's not the role of the government. Again, that's the role of the church, and that's the role of each individual, right, in the family and in the communities to rise up and give to those who are hurting. And we already know that the government's terrible at spending our money. So why are we giving more money to the government to incentivize bad behavior, to get people married to the government so that they don't want to work and they don't work? Why would we want to do that as a Christian? Because we know that that doesn't actually help them. Like, of course, we need to help people who are in unfortunate circumstances, but that's not the job of the government. That's our job to help people, get people out of poverty, right? Charity, right? Nonprofits, churches, outreach programs, all these things, but not the government. Not the government, because they literally just take our money and just squander it. Next, we must vote for the most pro-marriage candidate because God is for marriage as he has defined it. Genesis 2:24. True. So, Trump is not anti-LGBT, right? He's not. There's this idea that he's homophobic, he's transphobic, he's not. But he is for the uplifting of Christian values and religious liberties, right? And so if you do believe that marriage is between a man and a woman, as God designed it, Trump upholds that. Under Biden, they will categorize that as hate speech and you will be penalized and fined for it. I don't want to see another Bill 16 like Canada here in the United States, where if you don't acknowledge someone's pronouns, you can be fined because it's hate speech. It's absurd. It's infringement on religious liberties, right? Next, we must vote for the candidate who most closely believes government's purpose is to reward good and punish evil. Romans 13. I guess you can make the argument for both candidates that they feel this way, but Trump is much more the law and order candidate. So he does not tolerate the violent thugs for just completely terrorizing innocent citizens, right? Biden excuses them. Biden says, oh, that's okay. In the name of racial justice, they can do whatever they want, whatever means necessary. And lastly, we must vote based as close as we can on God's word. 2 Timothy 3:16. So there's a lot of things there, but I believe truly if you look at the Bible, right? Wealth inequality is biblical. God gives to those. All good things are given from God above, right? It's given to God from God, right? He gives the parable of the talents. God gives different talents to different people. We all have a different hand of cards, right? But when they talk about stand up for the oppressed, stand up, you know, and to give to your neighbor, you know, give to the homeless, care for the orphan and the widow. No, not the government, you. By you relying on the government to do that, by us relying on the government to do that, honestly, it's just laziness, right? But even if you do believe that government has to be all these things for these people, we already know that they don't help. So why would you continue to vote for it? Why would we continue to vote for them? No, like, we cannot. And so this is like very like fundamental Christian doctrine, right? So let's expand a little more why Joe Biden isn't a faithful Catholic, because all these things, like, he is against the Bible, but he has an expanded history of racism. I'll touch on that in a few points down the road in this episode. But he apologizes for far left extremists, and he does not condemn them, and he condones them, right? Like, his campaign team literally bailed out the rioters in Minneapolis. He stands in solidarity with a neo-Marxist group, BLM, and lets Antifa run around killing people and destroying property. Right? I mean, from this past year, $2 billion in property damage, over 30 people killed directly as a cause of the protests, right? Violent crime being shot up in unprecedented, unseen numbers in cities, right? In the past decade. I mean, it's just absurd, and he's like okay with it. Like, this is a faithful Catholic who supports this stuff. I mean, he supports abortion. He and his party support, you know, gay marriage. He and his party support stealing, because social limit essentially is stealing. It's theft. It's taking stuff from people that don't belong to you, right? And it's making envy a virtue. I mean, what about him is a faithful Catholic, right? And, oh, he's so much more virtuous. He's just, like, more politically correct. Yeah, like, he has a history of lying in government. He has a complete history of lying in government. His failed campaigns for presidency were all marked by him plagiarizing, him lying about his history in civil service, in school. You know, he lied about all these things. He has a huge track record of lying. What would you rather have? Trump, who's a little more obnoxious and a little more rambunctious and is a little more just outspoken, but he says what's on his mind. He's completely honest about it. Or Biden, who tickles your ear, tries to whisper sweet nothings into your ear while lying to your face. Who would you rather have? And they say, oh, Trump has lied so much. No, he's just hyperbolic. When he says this is the best thing ever in history, of course they're going to say, the Washington Post is going to say it's a lie. But he's just hyperbolic. He is not a faithful Catholic. He is a lying, slithering, like, deceitful, corrupt, crony, establishment politician who's been in government for 47 years. Which leads me to my next point. There's this assumption that he's going to do a better job than Trump. No, he's not. He's been in government for 47 years. 47? I haven't even lived that long, dude. Like, what has he done? What has he done? He's done nothing except lick his finger, put it up to the wind, seeing where the wind blows, and going where the wind blows. He's flip-flopped on so many policy issues in the past 50 years. He just does whatever's popular and whatever culture says is popular, right? When violent crime, when people were scared about crime, he's like, yeah, crime, tough on crime. Now that it's not popular, they're like, he's like, oh yeah, like BLM, like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, Trump nailed this during the debate. He was like, Joe, like, why didn't you do it when you were in the White House, right? You say all these things about criminal justice reform, and you say all these things about helping immigrants, you say all these things, why didn't you get it done in the White House when you were there for 8 years? He didn't. And then people say, oh, but he wasn't actually president. He was in the White House for 8 years. Do you guys realize what the vice president does? Vice president is literally second in command to the president. They have a lot of say in what they do in the executive branch of government. But he didn't do anything. Why? They don't care. It's just all political nonsense. He's not going to do a better job than Trump. What has he done that has directly benefited Americans? I don't know. Maybe someone can tell me, but he hasn't really done much except terrorize people, lock people up in cages, and lock people up in prison for minor drug offenses. Who's the one who got them out? Trump. Trump's the one who got them out of prison. And the cages and all those things, Trump's the one who actually helped to improve the quality of those facilities. In what way is he going to do a better job than Trump? The economy? When Biden and Obama were responsible for the slowest recovery from a depression in history? Well, what's he going to do? When he just sent tens of thousands of jobs to China? What is he going to do to help Americans in this country, especially those who are hurting and the most vulnerable? He's not. They don't have substantive solutions, and all their policies actually cripple people, and it's all a power grab. He's not going to do a better job than Trump. He's not. All right, this one is huge. This next point is huge. They say that he's going to unite us more than Trump did because Trump is so divisive. All right, first of all, in the Obama and Biden administration, they entered to 7 new wars. Trump entered 0 new wars. Trump pulled out his troops from the Middle East. He's continuing to do so, and he's making active efforts to do so. While Obama and Biden, they're responsible for bombing hundreds of innocent children in the Middle East, nuking them, drone strikes, all these things. Not nuking, but drone strikes and the media just covers them up. They're like, oh my gosh, worship Joe Biden and Obama because they're so great and they're Democrats. These are money-hungry, war-hungry, crony politicians. Trump's the one actually trying to get rid of that and bring peace. Man, it's just like, I just don't understand. No, he is not going to unite us more. Next point. All right, let's talk about his history of racism against the black community, right? First of all, he said, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black, right? A quote, literally he said, if you have trouble voting, deciding who to vote for, then you ain't black. What? Are you kidding me? He also called Trump supporters ugly in this election cycle. He said that black people aren't as diverse as the Hispanic community. And during the debate, he called Trump a clown. He told Trump to shut up, right? In 2012, he said the GOP and Mitt Romney will put blacks, he was talking to black people, he was like, oh, they'll put y'all back in chains. When Clarence Thomas was being nominated to the Supreme Court in 1991, he tried to ruin his life, right, by drilling him of rape and sexual harassment allegations against Anita Hill. That's what Clarence Thomas said. He said he was subjected to a high-tech lynching for uppity blacks by white liberals who were seeking to block a black conservative from taking a seat on the Supreme Court. Also, I talked about this before, Joe Biden drafted and sponsored the 1994 crime bill that disproportionately put black people into prison and minorities into prison that liberals and leftists always cite as a source of systemic racism. Also, a lot of people don't know this, Biden was accused of a lot of sexual harassment. There's a lot of memes of him sniffing people's hair, right? A lot of kids' hair. But there's this one instance where he was taking pictures with his Secret Service agents, and then one Secret Service agent, his girlfriend, wanted to take a picture with Vice President Biden at the time. And Biden just groped her chest. And then the Secret Service agent got so pissed, he tackled Joe Biden and was going to beat him up, and other Secret Service agents had to hold him back. I mean, you don't hear about these stories because the media just covers up everything, right? Covers up everything. The Hunter Biden allegations, right? I mean, they cover up everything. Big Tech just covers up everything. They block all the sites. They say all that's misinformation. They say it's Russian interference. But, there's proof and evidence that Biden colluded and benefited from foreign powers, right? But they'll all say, oh no, that's not true. And they won't investigate. It's so stupid, right? He has a history of being completely arrogant, completely prideful, being a complete liar, right? And being racist. I mean, there's that quote he said, he was against desegregation because he didn't want his schools to become a racial jungle. He's not a great guy. He's not gonna unite people more than Trump. It's not true. Literally nothing has changed with the Democratic Party. They've been the party of the KKK, slavery, and Jim Crow. A lot of people ask me, when I ask people, they're like, oh, what party is the KKK? They say Republican. No, they were part of the Democratic Party. They were the violent arm of the Democratic Party that terrorized people if they voted Republican. The Democratic Party, right, they continue to act like the saviors of black people by offering them help when in actuality, they just want to be in control of minorities under the guise of compassion. This was true in the 1800s and the 1900s, and this is still true today. The same thing with the plantation. They're like, oh, the world is so scary out there. Come stay with us in the safety and comfort of our plantation. Continue to be my slave, right? With Jim Crow, they're like, oh yeah, separate but equal. Like we're doing this for you guys. I mean, it's just, nothing has changed. Really, nothing has changed. They just marketing it in a different way. And also, this whole idea of unity, I mean, if you look at the full context of all these violent altercations, it's the left that starts them all. I don't want to make paint a complete broad generalization, but it really is the left that starts all these things. I mean, I just think it's so hypocritical that Democrats and mainstream media are now calling for unity and it's a time for healing, reconciliation, right? Now that Biden has won. But do you really think that Trump was the cause of disunity and hatred in this country? Do you really think that conservatives and Trump supporters were the cause of disunity and hatred in this country? Right? The Democratic Party is the party that espouses critical race theory that tells you by nature of your skin color, You are either privileged or not privileged, no matter what your circumstance, no matter circumstance you're born into, because of the color of your skin. If you're white, you need to apologize for it. How is that not racist, right? How is that unifying in any way? Democratic Party, they lie and smear conservatives, right? For example, Nick Sandman, who won a case because all of mainstream media was telling him, like, oh, he's like a complete bigoted Trump supporter when he wasn't doing anything wrong, right? And completely lying, smearing about Trump, about everything. Is that promoting unity by lying about Trump and conservatives all the time? Accusing Amy Coney Barrett of being a racist for adopting two kids from Haiti. Accusing Brett Kavanaugh of being a gang rapist with nothing to prove, right? The Democratic Party excuses and even bails out all the violent rioters and looters, right? But they excuse all the violence from the left, calling them mostly peaceful protests when over 500 of these riots have, of these protests have resulted in minority businesses being destroyed and innocent lives being killed. This idea that the majority of these protests are so peaceful, so it's okay, it excuses all these other riots, it's absolutely absurd. It's like this one guy was going around killing people, but he only kills like 7% of everyone he encounters. Oh, they're like, oh, that's okay, he's mostly peaceful. That's absurd. We need to call this out. Democratic Party refuses to because it doesn't fit their agenda, doesn't fit their narrative of systemic racism and peaceful protests to band together to fight against the big old boogeyman of orange man bad Trump. I mean, it's, you cannot, I just don't understand how Christians are okay with this. It just makes me so mad. Like, the next time you try to excuse someone and all these violent rioters of looting and destruction, like you go up to the children of someone like David Dorn, who was directly killed from these protesters, from the riot looter, completely violent rioters and looters, and you go up to these people, go up to the faces of these family members who are suffering, who are mourning and grieving for the loss of their family members who were killed because of BLM and Antifa, and you tell them that their death was necessary. You go tell them that they're necessary and BLM and Antifa needed to kill them for some sort of false sense of racial justice. You think God is gung-ho about that? You think Jesus is gung-ho about innocent people being killed on the streets for fabricated lies? No, absolutely not. How the heck is this unity? This is lies. These are deceptive lies that are made to keep you in control and brainwash you. This is not unity. Joe Biden is not the leader of the party of unity. They've been lying to our faces for the past 4 years and always have been. He's the face of the party that calls Trump and conservatives bigots, racists, sexists, Islamophobes, xenophobes, outdated, like, white supremacists. Biden is the face of the party that hates Christianity, that took God out of the Pledge of Allegiance, right? Unless they can use and weaponize Christianity to elicit an emotional response from like evangelical Christians. This is the party that espouses and excuses radical Marxist, which Marxism has led to over 100 million people being starved and killed to death, slaughtered, right, burned alive in the past century. This is the party that excuses it, right? They continue to lie and has all of media, Hollywood, academia, corporations, and big tech on their side. This is Biden's party. This is who Biden is representing. And he is okay with all of this. Unity? Really? Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers, not the peacekeepers, right? We cannot sacrifice truth in order to keep a false sense of peace and keep lying to people. We just cannot do that as Christians. Jesus called out the lying, slithering religious leaders of the day. The religious leaders of today, it's secularism. It's secular humanism being the religious cult of today, making you bow down. And if you don't bow down, you're excommunicated. That's the Democratic Party. That's Joe Biden. That's his party. Yeah, maybe for sure he as a person is a little more moderate, but he's a pushover. He lets Kamala Harris, AOC, Bernie Sanders, all these crazy radicals completely take over. You think Joe Biden is going to be in control when he's in the White House? No, of course not. It's going to be Kamala Harris and all these, the crazy left-wing radical crazies, socialists in the Democratic Party. They're going to be controlling everything. He wants to nominate all these people to cabinet positions. Unity? Really? Unity? I really don't want to be partisan, but come on, man. Like, come on. That's his favorite. Come on, man. As Joe Biden says, come on, man. Like, no, I'm just not having it. There's no, he is not unifying anything. If you think Trump is divisive, no, he was not divisive. It was the media. It was the media that went just crazy. Yeah, of course, Trump said some immature things. Fine, sure. But it was always the media taking him out of context, always just completely lying about him and all about conservatives. I'm not having, for the past 4 years, when they lied and smeared about everything about Trump and everything about conservatives, right? I used to believe those things, so I understand, right? I'm not having that. And they're going to come to us and say unity and it's time for healing? No. They're the one who caused all this. They're the one who caused all the lies of BLM. BLM is literally founded on a fabricated lie that black people are targeted by police. That's not true. It is not. They're more likely to be struck by lightning than they are to be killed by the police. Absurd. I'm not having it. The unity, no. No unity. He's not. They're not for unity. Go to Trump rally. Go watch one of my videos on my YouTube channel where I go to Trump rally. There's this woman who's like, we're not fighters, we're lovers, right? I mean, these people are, they love Trump and they love this country and they love America, right? Democratic Party is all fueled by hate. Trump base is all fueled by love for their country, love for their president, love for each other. Democratic Party is fueled by hate towards Trump, hate towards this country, and hatred towards those who don't agree with them politically so they can deem them and label them racist, bigots, and homophobes and whatever phobe. Really, Christian, like, come on, believer, look at it. Look at it. Take a step back and look at this. Which is the party of unity? I'm not going to say, man, but come on, really? Come on, man. All right, next. Another commonly cited reason for voting for Joe Biden instead of Trump. Joe Biden is protecting democracy while Trump was a threat to democracy. Excuse me? This is the party, the Democratic Party, that spent 4 years and millions of our taxpayer dollars to fund a completely bogus investigation with nothing to prove, completely trying to delegitimize the results of the 2016 election. I mean, what democracy is Trump trying to... I mean, okay, whatever. Moving on. Supreme Court packing. So, Kamala Harris... Joe Biden, they never answered. They kept dodging the questions. When reporters asked them, hey, do you plan to pack the Supreme Court? They wouldn't answer. Even in the vice presidential debate, Mike Pence just grilled Kamala Harris and was like, for the record, she didn't answer. He asked her like 5 times. She did not answer, right? Even Joe Biden said, the voters don't deserve to know whether or not I'll pack the Supreme Court. He literally said that. What's he going to do? He wants to pack the Supreme Court. Right? The Democratic Party wants to get rid of the Electoral College, right? Because they want to rule by majority rule and a pure democracy. We have a federal system that protects us from the 51% ruling over the 49% of this country tyrannically. We have a system. We have the Electoral College. We have a constitutional democratic republic where federally we are more of a republic. And on the state and local levels, we're more of a democracy, right? We have a system of checks and balances, a separation of power, so we ensure that there is no mob rule in this country. But the Democrats are trying to instill that because they know they control most of all the cultural institutions. They always have the popular vote, right? All the major cities are run by Democrats. All the major cities are consumed by Democrats, right? And all the urban elites and all the elitists are all Democrats, right? So they want to control more power. There's a reason why they want to lower the voting age. There's a reason why they want to extend all voting rights to all illegal immigrants. Because it's just all about power. Protecting democracy, they're compromising democracy. Joe Biden and the Democratic Party is compromising democracy. But why is Supreme Court packing so important? Because the judiciary, right? That's the branch of government that's supposed to be apolitical. There's a reason why we don't elect judges and justices to the courts in this country, to the Supreme Court especially. There's a reason why we don't, because they're supposed to just rule by the written constitutional law. They're not supposed to, they're supposed to put aside their policies and their preferences and say, okay, what does the Constitution say? What did the founders mean when they said it? What did the writers of amendments mean when they wrote these amendments in? What is the purpose of these things? How does it apply to today? Right? But they're just trying to pack the Supreme Court. Why? They're just trying to put more liberal and leftist justices, because we know that liberal and leftist justices don't actually rule according to the constitutional law, to the written law. They don't rule that way. They always rule according to their policy preferences. Every single ruling that they have always just completely aligns with leftist talking points. Always. So they want to rule it. Why? Because they want to legislate from the bench when it should not be. It's a judiciary. They're not supposed to be legislating from the bench. That's supposed to be for the Congress. It's supposed to be for the legislative branch of government. It's supposed to be for the state legislators. It's supposed to be for the legislators, not the judges and justices. But they want to legislate from the bench. 1960s, right? The left decided that they're just going to legislate through the bench and not do like our elected legislative bodies, because they realized not all Americans want this crap. Like, not all Americans want partial birth abortions. Not all Americans want like critical race theory to completely be indoctrinated into their kids. Right? So they're just completely continuing to legislate from the bench because they can't actually get laws passed that people like with legislators that people elect. So it's just, we see this history with leftist justices and judges that they always rule in favor of their ideology instead of written constitutional law, right? I mean, we see this in Heller versus District of Columbia, which dealt with Second Amendment rights, right? And we also saw this in Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission, right? Which dealt with the First Amendment right to freedom of speech. But Biden and the Democratic Party want to repeal these and overturn these things. And the way they're going to do it, and they want to do it, is to pack the courts, right? So pack the courts doesn't mean to fill a seat. It means to just completely just put more justices on the Supreme Court, right? And it's going to be complete chaos, because once the Democrats try to do that, the Republicans will try to do that, right? And it'll just be a never-ending amount of justices where you just won't get anything done anymore. But why are these things important? Because, for example, Citizens United versus FEC, right? This was about whether or not we have the right to criticize politicians, right? So Citizens United, a conservative organization, they made a movie critical of Hillary Clinton, and Obama's Justice Department wanted to fine and punish them for making this movie. And they were okay with the federal government having the authority to ban books, even books that criticize politicians. What happened to freedom of speech? How is this not a threat to our democracy, right? The completely trying to get rid of and infringe on the freedom of speech in this country, that's a threat to democracy. Who's on the side? Who wants that to be repealed? Not Trump, not the Republicans, not the conservatives. It's the Democrats and the left, right? Joe Biden has literally pledged nominee justices to overturn rulings in the Citizens United and Heller cases. Heller versus District of Columbia dealt with Second Amendment rights, right? About whether or not people had certain rights to bear arms, things like that. The other side tried to say that, DC tried to say, oh, it was only for like a general militia gets to bear arms, but not individual citizens. But it was a very close court ruling case, because the liberal justices were like, yeah, like we want to get rid of guns. But we know, if you're gonna defund the police, you gotta need guns. You need some sort of security to protect you and your family. So these are very important. Like not to allow Joe Biden and Democrats to pack the Supreme Courts. But that's what he pledged. Like, he literally, like, inadvertently pledged to do so because he just wouldn't answer the question whether or not he wants to pack the Supreme Court. Remember, little Sisters of the Poor, this group of Catholic nuns, the Obama administration completely harassed and persecuted them to force them to pay for abortions, completely infringing on their religious liberties as well. Threat to democracy, threat to our Constitution, that's Joe Biden and the Democratic Party. That's not Trump. But what about, like, why do we care so much about the Constitution, the Bible? The Constitution is not the Bible. Guys, realize the Constitution and the founding of this country is based and rooted in Judeo-Christian values and Enlightenment principles. So all the rights that we have and are outlined in the Declaration of Independence and in the Constitution are from the Bible. They are rights that the founding fathers say pre-exist government and are endowed unto us by our Creator. So it's biblically based. It's not the Bible, sure, but the Constitution, right? And this founding of this country is biblically based. So it's very important that we look at these rights and know these rights, because these are rights given to us by God, right? So religious liberty, sure, like I get it. Like we're always meant to be persecuted. Christians are meant to be persecuted. So like, well, what's the big deal? But religious liberty isn't so much for you, it's for other people, right? For example, if I lose my religious liberty, other people, all my neighbors lose it as well. I and other Christians and you guys, everyone should be willing to lay down your rights for other people, right? So I'll sacrifice whatever money I made to give to another person, right? I'll sacrifice my time. Like, I'll give up certain rights like Jesus did for the sake of your brother and sister. But when the government takes that away from you, they're not only taking away from you, they're taking away from another person and all your neighbors. Like, this is the mentality that I had. This was very enlightening in eighth grade. I had a teacher who was verbally abusive, and this is also why teachers and unions need to go, and the public education system is so screwed up. I had an eighth grade middle school teacher who was verbally abusive to me and other students. I was an excelling kid. I was a straight A student, but she was still verbally abusive. And there's times I was so stressed and I just could not handle it. But I remember, you know, in the Bible, they say, blessed are you who are persecuted, right? And then Jesus says, oh, when someone slaps you, turn the other cheek, right? So I was like, oh, like, it's okay. There's no big deal for me being persecuted. It's okay. Well, I remember I talked to my youth pastor about this. He said, well, it's not okay that you just buckle down and just like suck it up. I'm like, why not? He said, because chances are if you're suffering this, then other people are suffering it as well. Is this true? And I was like, yeah, actually, you're right. That's why we need to stand up for our rights, right? It's not so much for us, it's for other people. And this is not some sort of like sugarcoating of like, oh, I want to keep my rights. When the government takes away your rights to religious freedom, to freedom of speech and all these things, they will infringe on the rights of other people and persecute other people. And as Christians, we're supposed to stand up for the oppressed. We're supposed to stand up for our neighbors, right? This is not the America I want to live in. But this is the threat to democracy the Democratic Party and Joe Biden pose. As Christians, we cannot support it. Why are we intentionally supporting persecution of our brothers and sisters? Right? Like, this doesn't make any sense. So threat to democracy equals threat to the well-being of our brothers and sisters. And as Christians, we have the moral obligation and the duty to protect them and protect their rights, or else we're going to see some really nasty stuff where governments in the past, communist regimes and authoritarian fascist regimes in the past, have gotten rid of those rights under the guise of compassion. And in doing so, you saw slaughtering of people, people being arrested. And I'm not looking around, I'm not waiting for the Democratic Party to completely repeal everything and overturn everything about the Constitution and everything that makes this country so great and all the freedoms that we have, to see all my brothers and sisters be dragged to some leftist critical race theory gulags where they're tortured to death and indoctrinated and brainwashed. Man, I'm thinking about 1984. Y'all should read that book, 1984, if you haven't read it already. But lastly, I think the biggest reason that people quote why they voted for Joe Biden over Trump is because of Trump, right? It's not so much, I think most people weren't voting for Joe Biden because they like Joe Biden. They were voting for Trump. They were voting for Joe Biden because they're told Democratic Party is the party of compassion, love, tolerance, right? And they're told Republicans are racist, bigots, but it's just the lies about Trump. They hate Trump so much, right? So I expanded on this a lot already in my episodes on my debate thoughts and also on the episode where I explained why I voted for Trump. But in essence, right, the media has been lying about Trump the whole time. He's not misogynistic, he's not racist, he's not homophobic, he's not transphobic, Islamophobic, xenophobic, whatever. He's not any sort of those phobics. He's helped all those minority communities, he's helped all those people. If he is a racist, if he is a homophobe, if he's all these phobes, he is the worst kind because he actually helps them. There's a reason why the KKK support and white supremacist support went down for Trump, because he wasn't doing the things that they thought he'd do. They thought his message of make America great would be a white supremacist narrative. No, it was about making America great to its foundations of this country, of Judeo-Christian principles, embedded with Enlightenment ideas of freedoms and liberty, right? He's the worst. There's a reason why Richard Spencer, one of the most like outspoken advocates for white supremacy, reason why he endorsed Joe Biden instead of Trump. Trump is not these things. Yes, of course Trump is immature and he tweets a lot, and I sometimes wish he wouldn't say certain things. Like when I watched the first debate this past year of 2020 election, I just was like, oh, Trump, just be quiet, please. Just let Joe Biden speak. But honestly, like, how does his character, right? Like, not so much his character, but what he says, how does that affect you, right? How does that affect me? If he tweets something obnoxious, does that affect you and how you live your everyday life? Does that affect me and how I live my everyday life? No, of course not. But versus policy, right? If he pushes through and enacts good tax policy, for example, where it lowers taxes, so you're able to keep more of your paycheck and you're able to invest in your communities, in your family, and people who actually need it, rather than giving it all to the government, that affects you, right? The policies and action he's taken, right? That affects you. That affects us, right? His pro-life advocacy, right? That affects these unborn children, right? His repealing of all these regulations that the Obama administration put in, right? That hurt so many Americans, right? Put so many Americans out of jobs, right? All these jobs that, you know, Obama and Biden just shipped to China and other countries for cheap labor. That affects the everyday American. Maybe not an upper class, wealthy, progressive elite because they're just comfortable. But like for the everyday blue collar working, middle class American, like these policies and these things and actions that Trump has taken, these things affect you. And these things have significant repercussions for years to come. Like his nomination of three conservative justices to the Supreme Court, years of securing constitutional alignment in the judiciary. Like, these things are important. Not whether he tweets. You can hate his character, fine. But his policies and the things that he's done for America is, he has done so much good. He's done so much good. I can't even, like, continue. Just go watch my other episodes about why Trump is good for America and what he's done, right? And so, man, there's all these reasons, right? I mean, even if you hate Trump, right? Yeah, I just think about it this way, right? Like, for example, Paul, right? The Apostle Paul. We say he's one of the greatest theologians of all time. He wrote most of the New Testament, right? Most of our fundamental theological doctrine come from his letters, right? What did he do? What did he do before he was an apostle? He killed Christians. He persecuted them. He stoned them. He sent them, you know, to die. To be completely he completely persecuted Christians and innocent people. But God redeemed him, and now we revere him as one of the greatest biblical heroes because he wrote most of the New Testament. We get most of our theology from him. Why is that not the same for Trump? Let's say another example: David. He was a man known as a man after God's heart. What did he do? He literally murdered and committed adultery and raped a woman. But like, we still sing the Psalms, right? We still listen to his stories and think, oh my gosh, he's so great. Greatest king of Israel. But why isn't that the same for Trump? I mean, I've made some really bad mistakes in my past too, and I still continue to make them. But if I was characterized by my mistakes in my past, there's no room for redemption. Where's the room for redemption and grace? Right? There is grace. If there's grace for everyone, right? There is grace for Trump too. It doesn't just magically disappear for Trump. And sure, you can think he's so like nasty and everything, but there's still grace for him. And the same way, yeah, there's grace for Biden, but his track record, he's been in government. He hasn't done anything. Why would you trust him to do anything? And all his platforms are anti-Christian and antithetical to the Bible. Well, Trump, yeah, of course, like whatever, maybe whatever you think about him, sure, but you still need to pray for him and still support him as your president, and all his policies and all his like what all his platforms, right? And everything he wants to do for this country and for the church and for the hurting and the poor. These are all in alignment with the Bible. While Joe Biden is not, right? So we touched on a lot of things, but ultimately it just really comes down to grace, right? And having grace. And when we think about all these things, like, we got to be diligent. We got to be vigilant too. And knowing that the media is out to lie to you, the world will tell you lies and try to deceive you. We must hold fast to the truth of God's word, the truth of what's actually going on in the world, right? And it's a lot of work, but being a Christian was never meant to be easy. Never meant to be easy. There's a reason why Jesus said to pick up your cross. And if we can't even just do spend a few more minutes, a few more hours fact-checking everything and really truly being informed, how can we say that we're willing to pick up our cross? How can we say that we're willing to do whatever it takes to go to the ends of the earth for Jesus? Right? And so I'll leave you with that. That's my episode for today. That was a little long, but hopefully that kind of clarified things and debunked claims about why it is good to vote for Joe Biden and why Christians should vote for Joe Biden. And that's the episode. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. I'll catch you guys next time. And peace out. God bless you guys. Thank you guys so much. Hopefully we'll see a conclusion to this election sometime soon. It's kind of crazy, but let's pray for peace. Let's stay rooted in God's word and let's continue to walk with him. And I truly do believe with the Holy Spirit that we'll be able to walk in discernment and wisdom. Thank you guys. See you guys next time. Hey guys, thanks so much for tuning in to the Korean Christian Conservative. If you like this episode, make sure to share and subscribe to my YouTube channel, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. I do the show weekly, and so stay on the alert to hear from your favorite Korean Christian conservative. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.